There's not too many people that enjoy standing in lines. There's an old story, maybe you know it, about a Unitarian Universalist minister who found himself rather unexpectedly standing in a line. This minister had just died, and much to his surprise, he found himself standing in a long line waiting to get into heaven. Since he didn't believe in heaven, he was glad to have some time to stand in this line to get over his shock and amazement. But when that wore off, he started to get annoyed about the line. You know, after all of those years of dutifully serving people in a church, he figured at least it should get him into some kind of express line. So then an angel that was kind of patrolling the line gestures to a guy that was standing way at the back of the line, and he tells him he can come up, and there is an express line. As he walks by, the minister asks him, he says, "Hey, buddy, what did you do in life?" The man says, "I was a taxi driver in New York City." Taxi driver steps up, and the angel looks down at his spreadsheet and hands him a golden staff and a welcoming cornucopia of fruits, cheeses and wines, and lets him in. Finally, the line moves, the minister steps up, the angel takes his name, looks at him, and hands him a wooden staff and some bread and water. UU minister is very offended. He says, "Now the guy in the line in front of me is a New York cabbie all his life, and he gets a golden staff and a cornucopia. I spend my entire life in service as a minister, and I get this? How do you figure that?" The angel is unimpressed. "Up here, we judge on results," she says. "People listen to your sermons, they sleep. When people get into his taxi, they pray." I don't know much about any next life, but I do know something about this life, and it is that everybody does have to stand in line sometime, and it's usually annoying. It doesn't matter who you are, what you're doing, or how important you think you are. You might have to stand in the grocery line to check out, or in the movie theater to buy a ticket. And you know, you always have to stand in line at the airport in whatever group number you're in. These visible lines are a routine inconvenience, inviting our patience. But there are other kinds of lines we stand in that invite something different, that invite our spiritual self-discovery. I've always been aware of the ancestral lines in which I stand. And that's true of most people who are of Icelandic descent, which I am. My very earliest memories of having an identity apart from being a loved child in my family are about being proud to be Icelandic and Canadian and Unitarian. So a story from my own personal lineage is something that I have to share this month, as we all have been sharing stories in different ways about our ancestors. I learned early on that one line of my mother's family is traced back to Ingólfur Arnarson, the original settler of Iceland in 974. That's Ingólfur up there, his statue in the center of Reykjavik. So that was really cool. But I also learned that religious vocations are not a strong thread running through my lineages. Only two that I have found in this thousand-year line of Icelandic ancestors were clergy. The ancestors who have truly made all the difference in my life were actually lay leaders, my maternal great-grandparents, Einar and Fríðar Johnson. Einar Johnson was born in north-central Iceland and came to Canada in 1883, settling on Hekla Island in the middle of Lake Winnipeg. There he met and married Fríða, who had come to Hekla Island in 1877 with her mother Bergþóra Bergþórsdóttir, following the death of her dad when she was only four. So I am proud to carry the middle name Bergthor, which some of you may have noticed on my email address, a name that has been passed on through these recent generations of my mother's family. That is my grandfather Bergthor in the upper left. So my imagination has a vivid picture of Einar and Frida sitting in the pews of a little white church on Hekla Island during Holy Week 1891, listening to Reverend Magnus Skaptason preach a sermon about the love of God saving all souls. I cannot prove that they were there, but Reverend Skaptason was their minister, and the church in their village of Miklay on Hekla Island was in the circuit of congregations where he preached that Easter what became known as his breakaway sermon. The universalism that he espoused in that sermon split into the Icelandic Unitarian Synod, or Icelandic Lutheran Synod, pardon me, in the Interlake area of Manitoba. My great-grandparents were married on October the 6th, which was my ordination day many years later, 1893, and I imagine Reverend Magnus Skaptason performing that ceremony. By then, he was very embroiled in theological controversy. The Miklay congregation on Hekla, along with four others, had withdrawn from the Lutheran Synod and established an independent Icelandic Synod under his leadership. And initially, these churches didn't know anything about the existence of a universalist denomination. So when they sought a larger affiliation, it came through the Unitarian Church in Winnipeg, which was also founded by Icelanders. In the beginning, however, they were simply trying to find their way, as they understood it, through the Bible and into what the Word of God in the Bible meant to them. Einar and Frida left Hekla Island in 1900 and settled in Lundar in western Manitoba. Einar owned a livery stable, Frida raised the children, and was an informal nurse to the sick in this small town, and was a poet of some note. And she had a friend, and some of you who are older members may remember the late Reverend Emil Goodmanson, who was the district executive in Prairie Star District for many years. Her friend was Emil's grandmother, and together they decided to found a new congregation, the Mary Hill Unitarian Church. Einar and Frida's second son, my grandfather Bergthor, and Bergthor Emil Johnson and his wife Christine raised their only daughter Lilia as a Unitarian. And Bergthor and Christine became active in Unitarian Church affairs after they were married in Winnipeg and remained so all their lives. Bergthor was the chair of the 50th anniversary celebration of the Winnipeg Church's founding in 1941. So that's the Unitarian Universalist family lineage into which I was born and grew up. It's a precious thing and a gift that only a minority of people in our congregations have. The rest of us do something that is more difficult but equally precious in our congregations. We claim the lineage of this congregation, this association of congregations, as a realization, as a discovery, as a family that we didn't necessarily know we had until we first walked in these doors. I didn't fully appreciate what it meant to do that until later in my life when I had my own opportunity to own another lineage, a Buddhist lineage. Just as my Icelandic-Canadian identity conflated early in my life with being Icelandic Unitarian, my Unitarian Universalist identity conflated with being a Zen Buddhist. It became more and more clear to me through all of these experiences that our individual lives make sense only as we identify with an ever larger river of human stories on which we are carried. What all of my lineages have in common is that in each one, I have been proud to be part of a small, little known, little understood, but incredibly important group of people. As I got more involved in studying and practice Zen Buddhism, I found myself understanding more deeply what people who aren't born and bred UUs have to do to claim the ancestors from whom they are descended spiritually rather than through blood. So one of the invitations that a congregation like ours extends to people who join, like those we honored today, is to find ways to adopt the family story of this faith as your own. It can take some commitment to learn the story of how we got to be the unique religious community that we are, apart from the little snippets that you might hear about in sermons or in the membership ceremonies and trainings that we sort of have here in the fellowship. In the Zen Buddhist tradition, one of the most impressive parts of the liturgical week is the service when the assembled Sangha claims the lineage by chanting the names of all those in their line of teachers from Buddha's time to the present day. Every teacher's name from every generation over 2,500 years is spoken. And for good measure, a few mythical names are thrown in at the beginning, even before Shakyamuni's name is chanted, to acknowledge that Buddha was a realized reality in consciousness that already existed in human beings before he came along. Well, we don't have a liturgical equivalent to that in any ceremony we do in our fellowship. I guess if we did, it would have to have two dimensions to it. It would have to include great names from our UU history that most of us might know. Recent names like James Reeb, who answered the call to walk across a bridge in Selma. And pioneering names like Olympia Brown and Augusta Jane Chapin, whose leadership helped make ministries for women possible. Teachers' names like Sophia Lyon Foss and Angus MacLean, whose ideas about religious education made my own religious education possible. Founders' names like Murray and Ballou and Channing and Emerson, whose passion for the faith that we embody today, put their intellects and spirits and careers and even bodies on the line. Not only that, though, if we were to practice chanting our lineage, I'm kind of entertained by that idea, it would have to have a second dimension as well. It would have to have the names that were known and honored in this particular community. It would have to have the ministers that have served this community. Jacqueline Collins and Dottie Matthews and Jason Seymour and Roger Birchhausen. Can you imagine chanting Roger's name every week? But not only that. The lineage would also have to include the list of lay leaders held in blessed memory by many of you. And maybe as well it should include the lineage of still active leaders who made this congregation possible. In the Zen chanting, the current living teachers' names are included at the end of the lineage. For some of you, these are lines in which you stand that you are just coming to know and understand and claim. Kathleen and I are very proud to join you standing in this line and honoring this lineage, especially this month of talking about ancestors and celebrating the anniversary of the fellowship. While at the same time remembering, and to some extent through this ministry that we're doing, teaching that we're all engaged in something bigger than any singular ministry or time in the life of this congregation. As we all age our way through more and more seasons of life and the changes that they bring, I think most of us will get more and more intrigued by the life experiences of those who came before us. And, you know, when you include your family members in that, I must acknowledge that this process of understanding the life experience of those who came before us can be a part of healing some of the wounds that sadly do get passed on through family lineages from generation to generation. In relatively healthy family systems, the process of being curious about your parents' and ancestors' lives happens as naturally as looking into the mirror when you start to notice that you are becoming them, at least physically. I had longer hair and a beard until my 50s, and it helped mask the ways that I was becoming my dad. Now when I look in the mirror, I often see him and I think of him. I start to think about where he was in his life, his marriage, his career, at the same time that I was when I was in my 40s and he was still alive and starting retirement and enjoying being a grandfather. And I wish, looking back, that I had asked him more questions about choices that he'd made along the way and feelings that he'd had about how his life had gone. And yet, I'm not even sure which questions I would have asked him about his choices, and even whether I would have asked him in the right way. Well, I don't eat dandelion greens to remember my ancestors, but whenever I eat the Icelandic foods that my dad grew up on, I remember him and my grandparents and feel grateful for the fact that I was blessed with a family that provided a stable life and home. A lot of people don't have that gift in their lives. So for some, a challenge and a choice is made to look for other mentors and exemplars that can offer guidance on how to move through life cycles and seasons. And I think one of the tasks of spiritual maturity has to do with where we find our life's teachers. I'm not necessarily talking about formally assigned professional teachers that we meet in our school years, although, let me say, professional teachers are often included on anyone's list of influential mentors and spiritual guides in the lives of their students. But beyond those assigned relationships, I'm talking about the teachers that you seek out because they represent a lineage that you want to be a part of beyond your family lineage. We need guidance from people who can help us understand how to undertake a life's work. And those people aren't necessarily always going to be found in our family lineage. In some careers, there are obvious teachers that are involved in acquiring the skills that you need for a trade, a profession, passed down from one generation to another. So the lineage in my life, the lineages include teachers that have helped me become a better minister, a line of UU ministers, and of course the Zen Buddhist lineage of teachers in my studies. There are some people who seek out Unitarian Universalism because they have studied historic philosophers, theologians, writers, and poets who were part of our UU tradition. And they become curious about what this religion might mean in today's world. So looking for historic figures who represent teachers for you can be a part of this spiritual discipline. Reading their biographies, understanding where they were in their life's journeys at various times that parallel your life can be illuminating. And one of the striking things about reading the life stories of your own personal great teachers or reading their original writings is that we often find ourselves being touched by their insights into life struggles in ways that melt away the differences that culture and time and technology can create. We are so caught up today in how swiftly our lives have been moving through periods of change. And we can easily identify the ways in which the generations that are alive today have unheard of assets and advantages in the ease and longevity of our lifespans compared to any other human beings in history. But have our smartphones made us into human beings that are so different from those whose cycles and seasons of living were centuries before ours? Maybe not. Insights of the ancient philosophers of Greece, the artists of the Renaissance, teachers of Asia, the early American founders of Unitarian Universalism all still touch our hearts and lives and minds today in powerful ways. And the life issues they struggled with, issues of love and loss and loyalty and betrayal, health and mortality, creativity and discernment, haven't changed all that much. We are human beings standing in a line of wisdom seekers and lovers of life. And we are at the head of that line now, and the beneficiaries of all of their insights and their gifts and their courage. In the words of the poet John Wheelock, "We live, we are elected now by time, few out of many not yet come to birth, and many dead, to use the daylight now, to stand up under the sun upon the earth." May we do it well, in full awareness of that line that stands behind us and the line that ranges out before us. Amen.